Up next, we have our book reading program, Ohomini Iyotaka, read by Gail Hubling.
The Long Knives Are Crying, a novel by Joseph M. Marshall III, Chapter 29, The Long Ride. Through the night, Yellow Wolf had been guiding by the North Star. He was east of the Wolf Mountains, and at first had angled away from the rough terrain of its slopes and then back north. But the horses had not been able to safely maintain anything more than a fast walk. At a trot, they were snorting nervously at every shrub or sudden drop-off, and once both shied from a prairie hen that they had disturbed. Fortunately, he had hung on to the reins as he fell, and except for a sore left shoulder, he was none the worse for wear. At a walk, the horses were not as nervous. He saw stars reflected on the surface of a narrow creek and stopped to water the horses and refill his water bag. As he was about to remount, his gelding swung his head around to look west into the darkness, ears turned forward. Cloud's horse did the same. Standing between them, Yellow Wolf stroked their noses to keep them quiet. Neither of them exhibited signs of fear. Thus a bear or a mountain lion could be ruled out. But they were very curious. That left anything from deer, elk, and antelope to other horses. If other horses were nearby, it would mean people were nearby as well, since there were no wild herds around, unless possibly it was a loose horse. Yellow Wolf strained to hear but detected no sounds. Yet the horses were still peering intently into the dark. Something or someone was there. Two men waited at the southern edge of the village, watching the last of the night's stars in the western quarter of the sky. Cloud and Rain in the Face each held the reins to a warhorse, their packs and weapons tied on for travel. A teenage boy stood with Gall, Hawk, Eagle, arrived, leading a second horse. In the dim light of dawn, people were already moving around inside the sprawling village, and a few dogs barked here and there. By the time the sun rose, new horse guards would be relieving those who had stayed with the herds through the night, and the village would be awake and starting the new day. Sitting Bull, limping slightly, joined the small group. The old hip wound from his younger days as a warrior bothered him most when the weather was cold, or when the morning air was cool. Both Gall and Rain in the Face noticed the encased rifle tied onto the medicine man's horse. It was unusual these days to see him equipped and ready for battle. "There are more coming," he said to Gall. "Hard to say how many of us there will be, but I think we should not wait too long." Gall agreed, patting the shoulders of the boy with him. "My nephew will wait here after we have gone. If anyone else comes, he will point them in the right direction." They did not have to wait long, however. The group rapidly grew to a little more than 40 men, armed and equipped for whatever lay ahead. "It is time to go," Gall announced, then waited for Sitting Bull to mount before he jumped on his horse. In the next instant, everyone was mounted. Gall moved to the center of the group. "The last we heard, the Long Knives were camped at Goose Creek," he told them, "but I think they will be moving north. Our intent is to catch up to Crazy Horse. We will pick up his trail and move fast. Follow me." The big Humpbugbaw war leader nodded to the medicine man, and both turned their horses and immediately let out a low lope. Close on their heels were swift, shadowy forms of men on horses. On a narrow sandstone ledge on the rims to the north, Worm added small pieces of wood to the dim embers still glowing inside the ring of stones. "Gall is leaving," he commented, indicating the dark shapes moving away south of the village. The two medicine men had spent the night next to their fire on the ledge, meditating and praying. High Eagle stretched his legs and arms and leaned back against his willow chair. Sitting Bull had been with them for part of the night before he left to prepare for travel. "There will be a fight," High Eagle said, "but it will not be the fight he saw in his vision." "That worries me," Worm replied. "I think there will be more than one fight. We should be watchful while most of the fighting men are gone." The pinpoints of light in the valley of the Rosebud faded as the daylight increased. Through his looking glass, Cloud could see thin columns of smoke, which meant that the Long Knives were still encamped. He sat up and stretched his arms, then quickly checked his weapons. His water skin was over half full, though water was not a problem. Rosebud Creek was nearby. From a bag, he took the handful of pounded dried meat and ate. Finishing the small meal, he shook the dirt out of both moccasins and slipped them back on, tying them tight since he expected to do more than a little running. Standing, he arranged his unstrung bow and quiver of arrows across his back and tied them securely. As the light improved, he took out his glass again and made a quick but thorough visual reconnaissance of the long knife positions along the creek. He could see the dark shapes of men moving around and horses standing quietly on picket lines. He waited as the light improved and looked again. Still, he saw no signs of the long knives organizing themselves into lines as they always did when preparing to move out. Putting away his glass, he began working his way down the slope. At the bottom, he headed east toward the creek, deciding to fill his water flask while he could, but just as importantly, he decided to stay on the floodplain west of the stream. There were fewer hills and rises he had to climb. At the wide creek, he filled his flask and took a drink, then splashed water over his face. He felt good, strong, and confident in his abilities. Turning from the bank, he walked at a fast pace for a while before he broke into a trot, holding the encased rifle in his right hand. Although it looked less broken from a distance, the creek bottom was not totally flat and even ground. Consequently, it was next to impossible to set a consistent pace, so the best he could do was keep moving at a trot and extend his stride where the terrain allowed. He glanced constantly to the right and left at the skylines, and as much as he could without losing his footing or breaking his stride, over his shoulders behind him. At the age of 37, he didn't have the endurance he had had as a teenager or his early 20s, but he had always been a good runner and was known for his stamina rather than speed. Today he would need whatever endurance he could muster. By the time the first bright rays of the rising sun shot across the sky, he estimated that he had trotted well over 1,000 paces. His breath was coming faster. Not wanting to wear himself out because he had no way of knowing how far he had to run, he slowed to a fast walk to let himself recover. Walking backward for several paces, he checked his back trail, especially the ridge he had just left. He expected Crow or Shoshone scouts to ride out in advance of the column. Reaching the lip of a low grassy plateau, he walked across it and started to jog again when he reached the end. Ahead, he picked out a low ridge that gradually angled down to the creek bottom, and he decided not to stop until he reached it. By the time the last of the horses reached the creek, the water was muddy from the thousands of hooves that had walked across it. The last group of warriors took their mounts upstream to drink from water that was still clear, then led them into a broad meadow to catch up to the rest of the column. As the growing light defined the landscape and chased away shadows, all the warriors were mounted. Energized by the brief rest and refreshed by cool water, nearly 700 horses went from a fast walk into a high lope. A soft rumble rolled across the ground. A shout went up, and several of the warriors pointed to the east. The shadowy outline of a rider leading a second horse stood out plainly against the growing light. Rifles were pointed, and six-shooters were yanked out of belts. The rider lifted a hand, and a shout came thinly across the distance. "I am Yellow Wolf!" Crazy Horse broke from the column and rode out to meet the approaching scout. "Where are you coming from?" he asked. "I left from north of Goose Creek. Cloud sent me because the Long Knives broke camp. They are probably moving farther north." "Cloud is still there?" "He was going to stay ahead of them." By now the procession had stopped and several men approached. Good Weasel, Black Moon, and He Dog, as well as Two Moons and Bobtail Horse of the Cheyenne. "He thought you would not leave until this morning," Yellow Wolf continued. "We left at dusk," Crazy Horse told him. "What is Cloud planning to do?" "As I said, stay ahead of the Long Knives and look for you." Crazy Horse looked around at the brightening landscape. "We are west of Rosebud Creek," he decided. He looked at the war leaders gathered around. "I think we should send scouts east. If they see Long Knives or a trail of any kind, they can send a messenger back to us. Meanwhile, we can keep going south and look for Cloud." The men nodded in agreement. Four scouts were selected and moved out at a lope, riding more confidently in the growing daylight. The main body continued south. At the end of a long meadow, Cloud once again slowed to a walk. When he reached a slight depression choked with sagebrush and grass, he stopped to rest and turned to study the southern horizon through his glass. By now, he expected the first Crow or Shoshone scouts to be out ahead of the column. He put away his glass and wiped the sweat off his forehead with the back of his hand. Then he felt it through the soles of his moccasins, the barest of tremors. He immediately looked south, thinking the Long Knives were on the move, but he realized there were too many intervening ridges and hills. Kneeling down, he laid an ear to the ground. Someone or something was moving, and it had to be very heavy or very many. It wasn't buffalo. That was the only thing he knew for sure. For several more moments, he kept his ear to the ground, and the light rumble did not diminish. Cloud looked around. There was no cover, not enough for an adequate defense in any case. His next best alternative was to find a place to hide, a place where he could disappear completely. Staying down behind some sagebrush, he could feel the tremor through his feet growing stronger. Whatever or whoever it was getting closer. He took his time and glassed the southern horizon but saw nothing. Turning slowly, he checked the skyline all around. When he swung the glass around to the north, he saw a thin, dark, uneven line appear just over a ridge, a line that had motion. Deducing or at least hoping that the Long Knives could not have circled around him that fast, he allowed himself to consider that they might be Lakota or Cheyenne warriors. It was probably too late to find good cover, and he could not hope to outrun whoever was approaching, because the tremors he felt through his moccasins meant that horses were approaching. Pushing his way in between two thick stalks of sagebrush, the best cover he had, he studied his glass and looked. Framed in the circle were the dark outlines of men on horses, but they were still too far away for him to know who they were. There was nothing to do but wait. In the meantime, he pulled his rifle out of its case and loaded it. The sun was over the horizon now, and in the bright light he saw the approaching riders topping the ridge and moving down a slight incline. It was a long, wide line of men and horses. Patiently, he watched the front of the column until he recognized the yellow and white paint belonging to Crazy Horse. No one but Crazy Horse ever rode that mare. Cloud went weak with relief. He had not expected to see anyone until past midday at the earliest, if at all. Wiping the surface of his looking glass clean, he sat up and angled it toward the sun and then aimed it at the approaching column. Yellow Wolf pointed at the flashes of light. Cloud! He shouted. Cloud was glad to see Yellow Wolf leading his horse, but he was even happier to see the sheer number of fighting men. They slowed and gathered around him in a wide front. My friend, Crazy Horse called out, if you are looking for Long Knives, there are none in the direction we came. I believe you, Cloud replied, but I know where there are a few who seem to have lost their way. Good-natured laughter rolled through the rows of warriors who had heard the banter between the two men. Where are those lost souls? Crazy Horse asked as Yellow Wolf led Cloud's horse to him. Cloud turned and pointed to the southwest, to the peak of the high hill where he had spent the night. Over that hill to the south, on both sides of the rosebud. They started out before dawn and stopped there. How many? Two Moons asked, moving up beside Crazy Horse. Almost 1,000, I think. Over 100 Crow and maybe 60 or 70 Shoshone. Crazy Horse turned to the young Black Wolf, who was waiting not far away. My friend, he said, motioning to him, unfurl that banner. It is time. Black Wolf complied, removing the lance case and the covering for the point. He lifted the banner high above his head. The line of eagle feathers twirled and fluttered in the soft breeze. At the signal, all the war leaders gathered around Crazy Horse. We'll split into two columns, Crazy Horse said. My friend Cloud will lead one and I the other. I will go around to the west of that hill to the south, and he will go around to the east. I will attack first, he said to Cloud. As soon as I do, you attack. That way we will force them to split, and then we keep them that way. Crazy Horse looked around at the circle of determined faces. Take the time to pass the word. We will allow for our warriors to prepare themselves, and then I will ride forward. Look for this banner, he said, pointing toward young Black Wolf. That will be the signal to move out. The war leaders hurried back to the waiting warriors, and the call to battle flowed through the line of anxious men like a rushing spring flood. Cloud pulled Crazy Horse aside. My friend, send the man ahead of us up to the top of that hill, he suggested, pointing south. From there, the Long Knife camp is easy to see. He can stay there until they move, then flash a signal to us with a looking glass. Comes in sight, found his sister standing next to her horse. He wanted to send her home. I know you will follow if I left you behind, he said. So if you care how our mother and father feel, stay next to me. If you do not, I will tie your hands and legs and leave you hidden in some gully until it is all over. Buffalo Calf Road nodded. The look on her brother's face left no room for defiance or stupidity. I will go where you go, she promised. Good. His tone softened. Load your rifle and tie your bullet back in front of your left hip. That way you can grab the bullets faster. Little Big Man was ready for battle. Although the morning air was still cool, he had removed his shirt, as many warriors did, disregarding a slight and short-lived discomfort in favor of freer movement. Two six-shooters were tucked into the soft leather sash tied around his waist. A second belt he wore over one shoulder, this one with double slits to hold the 32 bullets he had for his breech-loading rifle. With a discerning eye, he inspected his horse as well as the girth and neck rope. Two small bags, one containing his shirt, were tied to the rope, and tucked beneath the rope was his long-handled stone-head war club. Hanging by a loop over his right wrist was a riding crop. With rifle in hand, he led his horse slowly through the maze of men and horses until he found Crazy Horse. "We have never faced this many enemies at one time," he commented offhandedly. "True," Crazy Horse agreed. The left side of his face was painted with a yellow lightning mark. Like Little Big Man, he was shirtless, and blue hailstones were painted across the top of his chest. A round red stone hung from his left ear. To the back of his head he had tied four tail feathers from a red-tailed hawk, all pointing down in attack position. All the symbols worn or painted were elements from his dream. "What we are many as well," Crazy Horse pointed out, "and our speed and movements will make the Long Knives think there are more of us. Besides, they are not true horse warriors. We are, so we will be the victors to this day." Cloud led his horse through groups of men preparing for battle. Some were tightening their horse neck ropes or counting bullets. Many were painting their faces and bodies. Still others were taking a quiet moment to pray. Young horse holders brought along to watch over the riding horses were gathering them on connected leads after the warriors had transferred equipment and weapons to their war horses. Cloud found Little Bird, Yellow Wolf, and Goings together, as they always were during moments such as this. "It is good you will lead us," Little Bird said. "Then you should point me in the right direction," Cloud replied, grinning. Goings nodded toward Yellow Wolf. "He told us about the Crow and the Shoshone with the Long Knives. If there are that many, they are not only scouting. They have thrown in with the Long Knives because they cannot wipe us out on their own." "That means the Long Knives have supplied them with guns and bullets," Little Bird added. "So there are over 1,000 guns waiting for us over that ridge." Cloud nodded slowly. "It seems all of our enemies are uniting against us. Think about this. If it were only us, the Crazy Horse people, against that many, we would be hard put. But because Sitting Bull brought us together, there are many more of us to fight them." He pointed back over his shoulder toward the ridge to the south. "It seems likely that the Long Knives and their friends have not moved because they were preparing cooking fires, and they are scattered on either side of the stream. That is good, because Long Knives organize themselves before they do anything. When we come from two directions, it will be too much for them. We will defeat them." Gaul led the group of warriors over the divide, following the trail of hoofprints. At the bottom of the slope, the trail widened, and he once again increased the pace to a low lope. Wolf Eyes climbed to the crest of the hill and looked south. The floodplain was not hard to discern as it curved to the southwest. Below him he caught glimpses of a narrow little creek that probably flowed into the Rosebud, and beyond the creek were dark spots. He took out his glass, and through it the spots turned into men and horses. As an experienced scout, he had long ago learned to look for the subtleties, the small signs that were always hidden in the broader view. But it was as Cloud had described. Small groups of Long Knives were scattered on either side, and he could see saddled horses. Long Knives were standing or sitting, many without rifles in their hands. Nothing indicated that they were preparing to move. On the north end, a small knot of Crow Scouts stood together, their horses picketed nearby. Just west of them, other groups that Wolf Eyes guessed were Shoshone were congregated among the sandbar willows. Glancing back down the steep slope to make sure his horse was still tied to a sagebrush, he settled in to wait. Once the Long Knives started moving, and there was no doubt they would eventually, he would flash a signal to Crazy Horse and Cloud. In order to prevent a telltale dust cloud, the warrior columns moved out at a slow, deliberate walk, like two wolves relentlessly stalking prey. Anxiety rode with them like an unwelcome companion, always there when battle was nigh. but overshadowing the anxiety, at least for a few moments, were thoughts and images of family, of wives, children, mothers and fathers, and grandfathers and grandmothers. More than a few of the Lakota and Cheyenne warriors remembered a father, brother, uncle, grandfather, or friend who had died in battle. For Crazy Horse, it was Little Hawk, always carefree and smiling, and recklessly brave. Then Hump, not only a stalwart warrior but a beloved friend, and also Lone Bear who had died in his arms. Cloud could feel the presence of his father and grandfather, both Crazy Dog warriors, and of course Rabbit. Those thoughts and feelings mingled with the images of Sweetwater Woman and Song. Reluctantly, he let them go to focus on the task at hand. He felt the power behind him. It was more than an awareness that over 200 fighting men were following him. It was their determination, their willingness to face an enemy who had more men and guns. Glancing left, he saw Crazy Horse at the head of the column heading in a southwesterly direction. Both columns kept to the low, wide gullies and openings that permitted easy passage and hid them from any scouts who would be watching. Wolf Eyes saw movement from several of the Crow or Shoshone scouts probing the brushy draws and gullies north of Rosebud Creek. Along the stream, however, the main body of the Longknife column was still at rest. West of his position, Wolf Eyes saw Crazy Horse's warriors move beyond his hill, following a winding gully. To the east, Cloud and his warriors were about to move beyond him as well. If he used the looking glass, there would be a chance the enemy scouts would see it, since he would be flashing it in a southerly direction. Bounding down the steep slope as fast as the terrain allowed, Wolf Eyes reached his horse and dismounted, threw caution to the wind as he galloped over the broken ground to catch up to Crazy Horse. A whistle alerted Crazy Horse as Black Wolf pointed to the rider approaching at a gallop. Wolf Eyes and his winded horse caught up. "The Crow and Shoshone are moving toward you," he reported. "The Long Knives?" Crazy Horse asked. Still along the creek, Crazy Horse contemplated for a moment and turned his horse around, then motioned for Good Weasel and Black Moon. "Take your men and spread out through these gullies," he told them when they rode up. "Watch for Crow and Shoshone. The Long Knives might be on the move." A line of 20 to 30 warriors followed each of the two war leaders as they dropped down into the gullies and pushed slowly toward the south. Waiting only a few moments longer, Crazy Horse signaled in advance. Staying in between the low rises and hills, the Lakota and Cheyenne warriors moved forward, rifles ready, eyes sweeping the skyline for the enemy. A short distance behind Black Wolf and Crazy Horse, a warrior grunted in surprise at the same instant a gunshot popped from the south. The warrior's mount jumped sideways as a bullet grazed the man's left hip, then sliced its way through the horse's rump. Other shots followed. The front ranks of the advancing warriors fanned out, looking for the shooters. Behind a rise, a dark form scurried through the brush. A Lakota shouted and fired. Cloud and his men heard the distant, thin cracks of gunfire. He quickly signaled for a halt and motioned for Yellow Wolf to look from the rise in front of them. The warrior dismounted and scrambled to the top of the rise and quickly pointed to the southeast. Cloud spun his horse and went back down the line of anxious, wide-eyed men. "We wait, we wait," he called out. "When Crazy Horse is fully engaged, then we attack. Hold yourselves back. There are plenty of Long Knives to fight in that valley. Think of the helpless ones. They are why we are here." From over the intervening ridges, the gunfire was sporadic at first and then came faster. Cloud held up his arm, holding his men back, his stomach fluttering with each shot he heard. And that concludes chapter 29.
This program is made possible by funding from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.